ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have entered into the most marvelous, greatest wisdom that Yajnavalkya was teaching to Maitreyi. Why did Yajnavalkya bring up the subject of love? Because Maya or the power of ignorance. How does it manifest? First, it manifests in the form that this world is real, my body is real, my possessions are real, my mind is real, my life is real, everything that I experience is absolutely real. And since every object is real, I can exercise my power of loving it. But Yajnavalkya debunks it and says, first thing he says, in this world, nobody loves anything, anybody. One only loves one's own self. What does Yajnavalkya mean by that one? One's own self, he means Atma. But why do we love Atma? Even Atma, or let us say God. If there is a believer, just imagine, and he is praying and praying, give me happiness, give me that greatest joy, and apply, no reply. God doesn't answer at all, and he is miserable. Do you think the person will go on and on praying? At first, he places his faith in the scriptures, hopes that God is there, and he listens to my prayers, and he is compassionate, ananta, daya sagara, and definitely he will make me happy. But if God doesn't give us happiness, then sooner or later, we give up even God. And here also there is a secret. Because I am not enlightened, I think I am separate from God. I am small, God is separate, but he is very big, his powers are infinite, he can do whatever he likes. It is this ignorant knowledge, ajnana. What is ajnana? I am different from God. God exists separately from me. But by that very understanding, we deny the very existence of God. Because by definition, God is not some powerful, separate being, but he is some other person. I do not understand. I think he is different, and that is called ignorance. But if I come to know, he is my own self, then the question of God bestowing grace doesn't arise. I have to bestow grace upon my own self. But what does it mean? Again, if I am not of the nature of bliss, I am not of the nature of happiness, or I am a mixture, I am a changeable being. Sometimes I am happy, sometimes I am unhappy. That's my nature. If this is my understanding, I am the Atman, but sukha dukkha are my nature and they are changing all the time, then my very prayer will be useless. Because what does every creature consciously, mostly unconsciously, what do? They are praying, let me have unbroken happiness called ananda. That's all. Broken ananda we are getting. Unbroken ananda, we will not get. Supposing a person goes to Brahmaloka, which is supposed to be the greatest source of happiness. Then here most of us do not understand that if Brahmaloka Ananda, no doubt great, but it is also limited, but it is the highest degree of happiness we can really experience. If that is our understanding, one simple fact we forget. Let me first give an illustration. Suppose a person is walking, he falls down, the injury will be the least. Suppose he had fallen down from something which is 10 feet high, definitely his injury will be greater. Suppose a person had fallen from 50 feet high, 100 feet high, or a mountain top, the higher the height, the greater will be that person's misery, injury, unhappiness, pain, suffering. So if somebody having experienced Brahmananda, when he falls down from that state, do you think he will only experience a little bit of unhappiness, or do you think equivalent amount of unhappiness he will experience? Logic, reason tells us the latter is the truth. So I must have Ananda as my nature, and it must be infinite, and then only my prayer, let me have unbroken happiness, can come all the time. And that is why Yajnavalkya wants to teach. The very first teaching that he says, he teaches to Maitreyi, the greatest disciple. And every scripture also is teaching the same thing. What is sannyasa ashrama? What is sannyasa? Sannyasa is not a outward garb a person puts on. Sannyasa is a state of mind where a person knows every object is undesirable because it is changing. Every object, the nature of any object, every object is not happiness. It only removes temporarily my own happiness from myself. If I can somehow find out a way how to remove that curtain which is hiding that my own bliss within myself, then there is nothing else that I require. I don't need an object. And that is why we already discussed both in the Mandukya and also in the Chandogya and also in the very first chapter, or in this very Ajata Shatru Brahmana earlier to this, that Ajata Shatru was analyzing the state of deep sleep. And one of the important points we have to understand is, why is it that we get so much of happiness in deep sleep, unbroken for at least a few hours' time? That is the first point. Completely unbroken, and such a thing would never happen in either the waking or dream states. Second, even more important, what objects are there in the deep sleep that we are experiencing, and as a result, we are getting happiness? Absolutely no object is there. So if I can get such a greater happiness in the deep sleep without depending upon any object, in the absence of every possible object, no body, no mind, no world, then it must be within me. So what I am searching for, like that Kasturi Mruga, we call it, there is musk deer, beautiful, intoxicating fragrance, and the deer goes mad, intoxicated. He wants to go to the very source. Alas, it cannot find its source because it is searching in the wrong place. So, taking up from there, human beings are, with the help of God, grace of God, with the help of the Guru, and in the light of the scriptures, the Guru tells, Tattvamasi, you are that source of infinite bliss, and infinite bliss can be experienced only if I exist infinitely without any break. We always have to take this point in view. If I want to experience unbroken bliss, my existence also should be unbroken. Will that do? No. A third quality is needed. I must be absolutely aware that I am experiencing unbroken bliss. And here is another point we have to take into consideration. If I have to experience unbroken bliss, my awareness, consciousness should also be unbroken. Otherwise, if I am distracted, like when we are reading a book or trying to meditate, then the whole goal, the whole object of my focus disappears when my mind changes the object of its experience by just remembering. That means if the same mind is there, and even if it is experiencing tremendous bliss, then it will be broken. Just imagine, there is a person, he was in deep sleep, and the deep sleep breaks every minute. What would be his condition? So, we must be existing, we must be 100% aware that we are not only existing, bliss is my very nature, and if that is my nature, nobody can take it away from me, and there is no gap, time gap. At this time, I get back my nature. At this time, I will not get back. But I have to understand, I am not the body, I am not the mind. Because what do the body and mind do? They break my awareness. Every second, how many different thoughts are coming? Every thought is a new world for me. But such a thing doesn't happen in deep sleep when a person is karma is very good and he is sleeping undisturbed for several hours. But even deep sleep is only as an example. It indicates that when there is no object, where from this happiness is, bliss is really coming out. Because it is everybody's exclamation upon waking up, Sukham aham asvapsam. I slept so happy, with full of happiness. Nakinchit avedisham. I did not know one meaning of that is, there was no object. Second meaning of the word is very important. Since I did not know a millisecond of unhappiness in my deep sleep, I was completely happy, accepting happiness. I did not know anything. So, that is why Yajnavalkya very intelligently, of course it is the highest truth, that if I can get so much bliss in deep sleep, which is happening how many times? Just to remind you, it is not that only when we are in deep sleep, we are getting that unbroken bliss. No, in between two thoughts. That is why whenever we say two thoughts, I am aware of the past thought, aware of the present thought, that means there must be a point, a no man's land, where the earlier thought vanished and a new thought had risen. And in between these two, however short, that thought must be that condition that I am myself, pure consciousness. But here is another truth we have to remember. We have discussed this point, but the purpose of the scripture is to tell us again and again and again and again until it doesn't slip away from our memory. What is it? In deep sleep, we are not aware of time. That means it is a state of infinity. When we are aware of time, it is a state of bondage. When we become unaware of time, it is the state of infinity. Similarly, in between two thoughts, it is only from a second thought's point of view, we say, I was so happy for a millisecond in between two thoughts. But when we are actually in the state of that deep, what is called no man's land, in between two thoughts, that is the state of pure consciousness. Pure consciousness means unbroken, unlimited by time, space and causation. That is what Yajnavalkya wants to say. So just to recollect before we proceed further, here it is. Yajnavalkya had two wives and he was a Brahmagnani, but to keep up the tradition alive and strong for future generations, he wants to set an example. So he wishes to take up straight away sannyasashrama. That is to say, he has skipped, as it were, vanaprasthashrama. But then I want to add, how do we know Yajnavalkya did not spend his vanaprasthashrama? Actually, this brahmacharyashrama, grihasthashrama, vanaprasthashrama and sannyasashrama, they have nothing to do with externalities. As Ramakrishna used to say, I learn so long as I live. Yavat bachi, tavat shikhi. That means, if our minds are open to learn what we do not know, we are in brahmacharya ashrama. And we can enjoy things like a maid in a rich man's house. That is called ideal householder's life. But when a person knows how to meditate, how to contemplate, how to do upasanas unbrokenly, remember, Sri Ramakrishna used to go to Panchavati at night. You have to meditate upon these subjects, these events. That is called Lila Dhyana. Just imagine in your imagination that you also, after Sri Ramakrishna goes towards the Panchavati, you also follow him and you find him absolutely without any clothes and you sit in front of him. But by that time, Sri Ramakrishna is absolutely externally, completely unconscious. And you sit for some time. Of course, we all get restless after some time. Mosquitoes are also great helpers in that process. Now, you must be wondering, what makes this person so unconscious? How is he able to fix his mind? What is he thinking of unbrokenly? Because the body consciousness had vanished, mind consciousness had vanished, only he was aware of his Ishtadevata. In this, just as an example, Mother Kali. But it is not the idea of Mother Kali that we have. Ramakrishna's idea of Mother Kali, she is pure consciousness. So he has become one with that already. We can only guess what he was doing. And by the way, the perfect example of living as a maid servant in a rich man's house, Holy Mother's whole life, she is the mistress of that game called I am the mother in this house. But she played only the role of a dasi. Every child that comes, every devotee that comes, every person that visits, what were they doing? Who was serving whom? It was Holy Mother who was really serving everybody because she assumed the role and the mother of all, even of this ant, of this mosquito. Wonderful incidents are there. We will not, of course, go into that. So, what I wanted to convey is that externally also, Yajnavalkya wanted to enter that state to encourage some people. That's why the scriptures divide sannyasa into two categories. Vividisha sannyasa, that is a person, his mind is full of distractions. Not only some external distractions, but his own thoughts are full of distractions. So in order to minimize amount of obstructions, he enters into a ashrama or a solitary place, thinking that the obstructions will be a little less, at least the concrete obstructions. One's mental obstructions, they will not disappear wherever we go. So, Yajnavalkya was not that Vividisha sannyasi. He had already attained. Not only that, he helped others also attain Brahmagnana. We do not know, but when he was debating with, teaching Maitreyi, debating with Gargi, debating with Kahola and other Brahmins, when he was teaching Janaka, some of them were definitely have attained Brahma Jnana. How do we know? Because Yajnavalkya himself certifies in the case of Janaka, Abhayam vai praptosi Janakaha. O Janaka, you have attained fearlessness. And fearlessness means I am Brahman. We have seen earlier, we have to remind. So he who thinks I am separate, Brahman is separate, Brahman becomes a cause of fear. Only for that person who knows there are no two called I and Brahman, whatever exists is one, he becomes fearless because from duality, only fear comes. So, he was not only a Brahmajnani, he was one of the greatest teachers of Brahmajnana available at that time. But another point we have to understand, even though he may argue with other people, but Brahmajnana can be imparted only to a person who has the capacity to receive what God or Brahman gives through this Jivan Mukta Mahapurusha. Without that, we are always begging, give me your darshan. Yes, if I give you my darshan, will you be able to hold it? Will you be able to bear it? Or like a vessel, or like a fuse, which is only 5 watt, and then 1,000 watt electricity flows into it. 1,000 volt electricity flows into it. And what happens? Fuse becomes diffused. Or that is why Ramakrishna said, slow and sure, we should not even ask for what we do not deserve. You give me, because you know better than me, what is my receiving capacity. So, Yajnavalkya wants externally, he was called Vidvat Sannyasi. Vidvat means already he attained knowledge. He was a knower of Brahma. That is called Vidvat Sannyasa. But to encourage other people, for those, especially Vividisha Sannyasins, he wanted to take Sannyasa. And because of his, not only Brahma Jnanam, but his capacity to teach, to argue, and to clarify others' doubts. So he became one of the best known teachers. And we guess hundreds of students must have gathered around him. And students will not come empty-handed. The nearer they come to such a personality, the more they surrender to him, because they get more than what they can give physically. Of course, kings as well as the parents of the students will give. Janaka himself had given 1,000 cows with their horns completely covered with solid gold. That message is there in this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which we are yet to enter, but we are going to do that after completing this. So, then he says, I have plenty of money and I want to enter, which means I cannot live with you. So I have you, Maitreyi, and you, Katyayani, you permit me, and whether you permit or not, Sannyasi will not stay. Because it is not a papa if a person, a raw fellow, who is not fit to become a monk, wants forcibly and keeping his wife in distress, takes up to sannyasa, he will be committing a sin. That's why Sri Ramakrishna specifically says, even for a good wife, a husband must make provisions for the future, knowing fully well what is going to happen in future is not known. Such a marvelous commentary. Sri Ramakrishna is the living Upanishad. We have to understand. So also, Holy Mother, even more, at least Sri Ramakrishna lived almost an isolated life. He never allowed any worldly people to interfere with his life. But he was more than happy to get some eager disciples, both some monks and householder disciples, and there were only few. But Holy Mother has to live with the unsavory relatives and so many troublesome even disciples. Of course, there were many good devotees also who revered her, looked upon her as the mother of the universe, etc. So she had to deal with everybody. But unlike us, she could discriminate even those who were oppressing Indians at that time. She said, they are also my children. We have to understand, if you are looking for an example of how to live like a maid servant, that is pure karma yoga, shiva jnane jiva shiva, the best example we will not get other than Holy Mother. We have to understand that. So he offered to, Yajnavalkya offered, these riches, I am not going to leave you in distress. Where, how are we going to live? You are looking after us all this time. No, you will have plenty of it. You can have servants and all your needs will be met as far as possible, because any amount of riches cannot prevent diseases, cannot prevent mental distress. There are so many things. External possessions have a very limited role to play in our happiness. In fact, they cannot produce even the least bit of happiness. They can make our life comfortable. That's why, as one Swami said, that a rich person who is worrying too much, he will be worrying in an air-conditioned room, and a poor man without air conditioning, he worries. Absolutely, there is air conditioning is not going to help either of them in any case. So, he offers to Maitreyi. Of them, we can clearly see Maitreyi was a highly fit spiritual aspirant, highly developed. So we should understand that if she was at the initial stages, only started her spiritual life, or only after her husband announces his intention, then she starts thinking, no, it is not like that. She must have been practicing like Holy Mother. Remember, why I am bringing Holy Mother again and again? There is a lot of resemblance between Holy Mother and Sri Ramakrishna. These are the modern Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi. So, Holy Mother was told by Sri Ramakrishna, I want to lead a spiritual life. What do you want? Because since I am married to you, you have a right. This is a great opening to all husbands. Just because you marry, you don't become God to your wife. She has 50% right, Sahadharmini. Then immediately Holy Mother replied, we all know that. No, I have not come to pull you down. I also want to follow your footsteps. Ramakrishna not only was very happy, immediately he initiated her and told her. But the point is, how was she able to answer, give that answer instantaneously without thinking? That's because she had become, so to say, from study point of view, that she was ready to receive that initiation, that higher teaching from Sri Ramakrishna. Exactly same thing we have to understand. Maitreyi must have been not suddenly become a spiritual person, but janma janmantara, so many lives. And this would be her last life. Because once Yajnavalkya accepts, there is no question of her having further lives. So, immediately she asks the most intelligent question. My goal is liberation, mukti. I want to be a Brahma Jnani, Brahma Vadini. Brahma, the word Brahma Vadini has two meanings. That is to say, Vadini means one who obtained already knowledge of Brahma. But the other meaning is, what does a Jivan Mukta do? Goes on talking about God only. In the understandable term, if Sri Ramakrishna is talking to a Christian, he will talk in terms of Christ. To a Muslim, in terms of Allah and right practices. So they can adopt, because there is no such a division in their minds. The only division is, does this person or is this person ready for this instruction? That is the only thing. So, Yajnavalkya wanted Maitreyi, and he knew because he was such a great teacher. The moment I teach, she will also become like me, a Brahmavadini. That is to say, she would not only be a knower of Brahma. We don't know anything about what was the life of Maitreyi after she became enlightened. But what do you think? If she stays, so long as she lives, if she had not entered into Nirvikalpa Samadhi, we have to guess that whoever comes to them, in general, she would be talking about God, but in particular, if somebody wants, then she herself becomes a fit person to teach about Brahma Jnana, because a knower of Brahman doesn't have these divisions of gender. This is male, this is female. So there are so many wonderful saints, and one, Mirabai, she was a Brahmavadini, even though she used to call that Brahman as Krishna. There was Tulasidasa, he used to call Brahman as Rama. So he was a Brahmavadi. In the south, Basavanna is there. He who doesn't see Shiva in everything, all the time, he is not a Shiva Bhakta. But even marvelous, there was one lady called Akka Mahadevi. She used to wear no clothes at all. But it is said, whoever sees her, she has become so pure. Immediately the idea of motherliness, this is my mother, the idea this is a woman, desirable object, that such a thing never enters into the mind of anybody who encounters her. She used to live in wild, in a wild places, rarely she used to encounter people, but if she encountered also, her naked body doesn't produce worldly thoughts. On the other hand, they will only produce most marvelous thoughts of God, purity, sacredness, etc. That is the power of these great people. God makes them like that. Otherwise, if anybody looks upon them in a negative way, worldly way, they will be turned into ashes that very moment. Anyway, what about Andal, the greatest lover of Krishna, and she became one with Krishna. She married Krishna. Of course, his name was Ranganatha Swami. All these, how many other stories are there? I'm just mentioning because this is more important than just reading the sentence meaning of these Upanishads. Maharashtra had produced marvelous women saints. We know it. Everywhere there were men saints, male saints, but female saints. Now what we need to understand here, how marvelously there was one, I think, Rukubai, and her husband, her mother-in-law, hated her, got the greatest amount of work done through her. And the mother used to use her son, who could not say no, to beat her up. And once he was beating her up, she was completely helpless. Remember, several centuries back, east or west, women were playthings in the hands of men. How much of hellish suffering these people had to go, and then even people burned, you know, the famous witch burning, etc. So this lady, her only gati is to call upon her beloved Krishna. She is to, every time pain comes, she used to call out Krishna, and Krishna had taken all the blows that her body was receiving upon his body, like Sri Ram Krishna took upon himself the blow of one of the boatsmen who was beaten by another boatsman. We must recall that incident. So the husband went on beating, and then next day the priest found traces of blood on the image, on the back of the image. They were shocked. How can a stone image suddenly emit blood? For us, it is a, what is called, lifeless stone. However, what is called, we invoke prana in the world, opening the temple while doing puja, etc. For us, still, it is a statue. But for the, in the eyes of these great people, there is no statue. If this lady had gone to that Purandara Vithala, then she would have seen him, she would have talked with him, etc. So we see everywhere, Brahmavadinis are there, and if anybody thinks Brahmavadinis are not there nowadays, we have to hang our heads in shame, because as Swami Vivekananda had proclaimed, that with the advent of Holy Mother, so many women will become Brahmavadinis. Once more, our sacred land will be flooded with that. Anyway, I am carried away a little bit. Coming back to our subject, Maitreyi asks one question. If I get all these things, will they help me in obtaining the knowledge of Brahman? Of course, Yajnavalkya says, no, you will live a comfortable life. He did not even say you will live a happy life. We have to take this point into consideration. Said you will have a good bed, a good house, beautiful animals, many servants, many utensils. They will be catering to your comfort, but not to happiness or bliss. That is a purely state belonging to the mind alone, not anything to do with externalities. And Maitreyi, this is where her viveka gets exercised. Vairagya comes. She says, what am I to do? My goal is not to have riches. My goal is to attain Brahmajnana. And I reject all this property because she understood. Not only will they not give Brahmajnana, but what do you think is the greatest obstacle to our progressing in spiritual life? It is too many possessions. So that is what she understood. She rejects. But it is not that she rejects. She says that you offered me something. You have something else. Not only property, but you have something else. What do you have? You have that knowledge of Atman, knowledge of Brahman. As a rightful partner, Dharmapatni, you will have to give that Dharma also. Teach me how I could become immortal. And Yajnavalkya, being a great Brahmavadi, understands, accepts her, because he recognizes this is a very fit disciple. And then the teaching starts. What is the first teaching? First thing is about Vairagya, about dispassion. What is dispassion? People are running mad after the objects of this world, under the mistaken notion that first of all, every object gives happiness. Secondly, every object goes on giving happiness because it is its nature. Thirdly, there would be no time when the object will give me the opposite result, suffering. So that is why if we come to know really that object doesn't possess happiness, objects cannot give the same one moment they can give happiness, next very moment they will plunge us into the deepest abyss. And every object is changing, including me, the experiencer, my body, my mind, my sense organs, everything. This is the most wonderful reply Nachiketa gives to Yamadharmaraja. Even if you grant me all these possessions, me, the experiencer, I cannot be unchanging, because there is only one object which is unchanging. That is Brahman. My body is not Brahman. My mind is not Brahman. They go on changing and they only become less and less energetic, and the senses lose their power of squeezing out happiness. What a person can enjoy at the age of 10 or 20 years old, no old man can ever enjoy. He can only squeeze probably 1% of happiness, pleasure out of it. And then he goes on wondering, what happened? I used to enjoy. What happened to you? You used to cook such a tasteful things. Now you are neglecting me. Your food is just very ordinary food. Unable to understand, he was the root cause of the problem, not the food or anything else. So, in this world, nobody loves anybody. Nobody loves any object. But everybody uses an object, thinking it is an instrument for one's own happiness. But sooner or later, that person, as soon as he squeezes all the happiness, understands no more squeezing of even one drop of ananda will come from this object. He discards it like a chewing out sugar cane. So everything is allowed solely for the sake of one's own self, that is, for my happiness. But I am getting happiness. But you say the happiness is not belonging to the object. Then where is it? Because Yajnavalkya never denied there is happiness, bliss. But he denies objects have happiness. No, objects do not have, but they merely temporarily remove the obstacle we ourselves have created, not allowing our own inherent bliss to manifest. An object temporarily, only temporarily, removes that obstruction. And we experience momentarily that happiness, and wise persons understand it is my own happiness I am experiencing. And with that, one thing becomes clear, there is no happiness outside, all happiness is only within, inside. Then, naturally, if I find anybody, even a fool, oh, I am not going to get any happiness in this object, I am going to get happiness in the other object. Then, after experimenting with several objects, no, there is bliss, there is happiness, but it is not outside, it is inside. That is when the Upanishad says so beautifully, avrutta chakshuho amrutatvam ichchan. Until this time, the Brahma Vidhata created the senses outgoing. But now he understands, I have been wandering like the musk deer, but I must examine myself, because all the intoxicating fragrance is coming from within myself. The bliss is coming from within myself. This withdrawal from outside to inside is called vanaprastha ashrama. Then the real upasana starts. How I can obtain that bliss, not occasionally, not a small bit, but permanently and 100%. That is the purpose of upasana. So, Yajnavalkya makes it clear that there is only one object. It is of the nature of infinite bliss, of infinite existence, of infinite consciousness, and that is the object. So, he also breaks down love into two categories. Conditional love, unconditional love. What is conditional love? Every object, only my mind, my body should be in a particular condition, and the object also must be in a particular condition. Even though you are all intelligent students, but still, I want to repeat it again and again. So, only when I am hungry and my stomach is able to digest, I have no other health issues, I have no mental worries, that is the condition upon the part of me, the experiencer. And the object, say, a ripe mango, it should not be unripe, it should not be overripe, it is just at the ripe condition, and it should be available to me, and it should not be contaminated with insects. Or so many times when you open the mango, you will see terrible insects, they burrowed, they grow up there, they eat that pulp, and then they are ready, big, huge maggots. Like that will be there. No, perfect, and the flavor is perfect. So, outside also there are conditions. Of course, the greatest condition, please do not reveal it to anybody, only for my particular students in this class, see that nobody else is present to share that one mango. When these conditions are fulfilled, and then when we come into contact, make it our own, even then we have to make it our own. That is a beautiful point. So, whatever happiness we think the mango can give, now that happiness, as it were, entering along with the mango inside us. And that is what we mistake. That reinforces my mistaken notion that this happiness is outside Now because of this mango, I have become one with mango. I made mango one with me. So I am getting its happiness along with it to me. This applies to every object in this world. So every love is a conditional love. But there is another unconditional love. Everybody loves one's own self and there is no condition. I am healthy, unhealthy, rich, poor, even happy, unhappy, doesn't matter. I love myself because I identify myself with my body, with my mind. Even at that stage, I do not wish to die. Only when this body becomes insufferable, then only we wish to give up. So this is what he said. And then Yajnavalkya continues this topic and says that if you want unbroken bliss, you will have to know that you are that unbroken bliss. The point involved here is that if the self is something different, even if it be unbroken bliss and infinite existence, but not one with you, not you, then it doesn't do any good. Because the fundamental point we have to remember, one, two separate, if there are two separate objects, one object can never ever become the second object completely. No, it is not possible. So, if there is only one object and I am not able to understand that I am that one object, then only it is possible. And what makes me think I am not one with God because of ignorance, that ignorance can be destroyed. It is a negative action. I am not obtaining anything new. I am only removing the obstacle. Then I realize I am, I was, I am, I will be Brahman only. This is the lesson he wants to tell. How to reach that state? Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasana. Of course we discussed what is Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So even we have also gone through, I think, two mantras. In our next class, we will take up from further mantra onwards. Main important points I have discussed here. It should not be difficult for us to progress further quickly. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagat Gurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.